is a test of the emergency broadcast system.
This is only a test.
DJ's in MC. This DJ, he gets it out.
Listen to the disc jockey's introduction to...
Two DJs in a mic with your host, DJ Mike.
Is that a timetable?
And DJ JP.
Well, get on it. It's your time.
Give me the mic.
Okay, guys, welcome to another episode of Two DJs and One Mic with myself, DJ Mike, and the infamous DJ JP.
What's up, Mike? What's up?
And we're blessed here to have the great
Jordan St. John.
Mm.
Yeah. But before we get into the show, y'all, we just have to make huge announcement. Officially, we are now sponsored by Curator Live. Curator Live is now the official sponsor for Two DJs and One Mic. If you're looking for the perfect photo booth software, look no further than Curator Live. MyCuratorLive.com. Tell James we sent you. Again, he is now, James and his whole team is now the official sponsor for Two DJs and One Mic.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I like that.
Yeah.
Was that the DJ
voice? Yeah, of course. Okay. How you doing, sir? How you doing?
I'm glad to be here. How about you guys?
We're doing good. We have to say, how's the weather in Canada?
Don't even start. Actually, to be honest with you, in the last week, it's just started to break a little bit and start the journey into spring. Mm-hmm. But as anyone who's ever been up to Canada knows, it's quite cold in January and February. And so because of that, I basically don't go outside for 2 months. I make heavy use of the Uber Eats grocery delivery service. Mm-hmm. And it's rare that I venture outside my door, except of course to go to the Photo Booth Expo every February in Las Vegas, where I last saw you guys.
Goodness.
Oh, well, he has a good reason to go. He can stay warm.
Yes.
Well, you know, and it's funny because in Vegas in February, it's still relatively a little chilly for their standards. And so I hear a lot of those PBX attendees always complaining about the cold. And I told you before, I just have to laugh a little bit. You know, it's like Vegas in February is a walk in the park for us Canadians. And so the fact that the Americans are sometimes complaining a little bit about February weather in Las Vegas, I get a little chuckle out of that, you know?
I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. One of our attendees of the show said it stopped snowing there. He's asking a question.
Okay. Yeah, it's above zero. The snow has all melted. And, I'm getting ready to venture outside again, you know, peep my head out the door. It's good to go. But, and this is the thing, like, you know, DJs up here, it's not, you know, listen, DJs everywhere have a tough time, right? At the end of the party where everyone's starting to hook up and everything like that. And you're a DJ, especially at a mobile, and you're sitting there, you know, bundling your cords and everything like that at the end of the night when everyone else is about to proceed to the next step of their night. That's a little bit tough. And up here in Canada, especially in the wintertime, there's an added element to that end of night burden, and that's of course the snow.
Mm.
Right?
Try loading
your truck or your trailer or your minivan at the end of the night when you're slipping and sliding all over the place in January and February.
So there, do a lot of venues have equipment, or you still gotta load in and out everywhere?
Well, it depends. If you're a mobile and you're doing a wedding or a high school dance or a bar mitzvah or even a like a corporate special event, you are still loading and unloading and loading gear at the beginning and the end of the night. Load in and load out, if you will. And that doesn't change up there. Like, but nightclubs, I mean, we've got some of the best nightclubs in the world up here, especially Toronto. A little known fact. All right. The big five mafia families of New York City used to actually send their profits up to the crime family in Toronto to actually take care of the money. And what that Toronto family did was they actually put it up into these huge, huge nightclubs. And so back in the day, you know, I used to DJ in some of those clubs, and we're talking about 4,000, 5,000 people a night, you know, I was DJing for in the clubs. Like, really, really, really great stuff, right? You know, and, you know, of course, those clubs have their own gear. You just walk in with your music.
Plug and play, baby.
And you play, right? And that's the way it should be. But the life of a mobile entertainer, whether it's DJ, photo booth, whatever, it's still the same. It's you're loading in, you're loading out, and the grind, you know, it's the same struggle. The struggle is real.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, let's jump into these questions. Sounds cold.
Yes, it does. So how did you get into digital marketing?
All right. So like anyone who remember, you know, who's heard my seminars over the years, the reason why I get asked to speak at DJX and PBX, et cetera, is because I actually used to run a pretty big multi-op back in the day. And, you know, younger and everything like that. I'm sick of gear now. I'll never get back into it. Besides, if anybody ever brought me in to DJ a wedding, even on an emergency basis, I would probably just butcher the whole thing. But back in the day, sorry?
I said the butcher.
Oh, yeah. What was my DJ name at the end of my career there? The Chop Master? the master of the double beating? no, it wasn't that bad. But, I mean, for me, the last DJ event I ever did was Deerfield Academy back in 2007 or 2006 or 2007.
Wow.
And the last party that I ran as a promoter was 2013. So digital marketing. Here I am, and it's 2004, okay? Mm-hmm. I had had my run. I was like at the tail end of my DJ run, and I had started actually getting into promoting. And I was living in Niagara Falls on the Canadian side. So what we did was we hopped the border. And we were promoting this club called Infinity, which only had a capacity of slightly less than 600 people on Transit Road in a suburb of Buffalo called Williamsville. And if anybody here is a football fan, the Gronkowski brothers come from Williamsville. They actually used to come to my events. I know not Rob himself, but one of the brothers, he came as a little 15-year-old and stuff, and he passed out my flyers for a while. So that was cool. But so we had started promoting this. And then one afternoon, as we were getting ready for the next event, one of my little girls who was passing out my flyers, like a street teamer girl kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. She comes up to me and she goes, "Why aren't we doing anything on MySpace?" And so I'm sitting there like, what the hell is MySpace? Because I wasn't a tech guy back then. I mean, I was like anybody else. I knew how to surf the web. I knew how to return an email. And that was it. I just hadn't dove in yet, right?
Okay.
So she says to me, she goes, "Why aren't we doing anything on MySpace?" And I'm like, "Well, what the hell is MySpace?" So she proceeds to take my partner and I to a Kinko's. You got to remember back then you could go to Kinko's and rent a terminal. Like, this is before laptops, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we go to Kinko's and she shows MySpace. And honestly, it was a target demographic marketer's dream. Because if you remember those early days of MySpace, you could choose a school and you could pull up everybody who was linked to that school who was actually on MySpace. So my partner at the time, a guy named Carl Smith, We actually sat there for the next 22 hours and started building up our first MySpace profile. We actually had to talk to the customers. You got to remember, if you remember those Kinko's, some of them were open 24 hours, right?
Yeah.
This one was open 24 hours. And so the side counter guy for Kinko's actually kind of got stressed out at one point. He was like, "You're not going to rob us, are you?" And I'm like, "No, no." So we actually ordered a couple of pizzas, and we shared pizza with the side counter guy so he wouldn't call the cops on us. And we were just manually clicking for 22 hours straight. And within 3 months, we had a profile of over 40,000 Buffalo high school and college kids. All right.
Wow.
So the next party we had in Buffalo, it was a teen night on a Sunday before Monday holiday. Of course, that's when teen nights usually go down. And the next, that next party was the first one we ever did using the power of MySpace combined with all the traditional marketing that we did. And it was insane. We went from about 800 people a night to 2,200. And it was like one of those parties where you have all the usual problems with overcrowding. Kids fighting outside because they couldn't get in. Other kids like saying, listen, I'll give you $100 just to get in. And the cover was only 15, right? But you get these rich kids and they're like, I'll slip you a casino right now if you let me in the back door kind of thing, right? So it was one of those environments. Eventually, the whole thing fell apart. We had to call the cops and everything like that. But that kicked off a process where rather than be that traditional kind of promoter where you're passing out flyers everywhere and you've got multiple staff, we became the digital promoter. And that was my entry into digital marketing, right? So the next city we launched after that was Rochester. And we were able, for the first time ever, a promoter was able to actually reach people online without sending them a flyer, without knowing them personally, all that kind of stuff. And if you remember how MySpace was back then, it was the cool new way to find out about an event, right? So all of a sudden, our numbers, not just in Buffalo, but we launched in Rochester, we launched in Syracuse, we launched in Albany, then we moved it down, we launched in Allentown, we launched in Scranton, and then we moved over to New England, we launched in Providence, we launched in Hartford, and then launched in Boston. And the thing about Boston is we started doing 3,000 to 3,500 kids a night at $20 covers, and this is in 2006. Right.
So where were y'all putting all these? What were y'all at, a football stadium?
Yeah.
Well, after a while, we ended up at a venue called Showcase Live, which is in that big box mall at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough where the Patriots play.
Oh my God.
And that was an explosion. So out of those events, we ended up getting the contract with Live Nation to do these events at all the different House of Blues up and down the East Coast. So by the time promotions was over in 2013, we had done parties in 29 different cities. My F-150 pickup truck had over 950,000 kilometers on it, which is about 700,000 miles roughly. We had made a bunch of money and everything like that. But just like anything good, all good things must end, right? And the scene shifted. Right. Everyone wanted to go to those festivals instead of the regular club night, whether it's teen or college or whatever, because we were doing both. Right. Uh-huh. And so by the time 2013 rolled around, everything sort of fell apart when the kids would rather spend a couple of $100 on a festival ticket, you know, just to go to one event in the summer rather than actually go to the House of Blues for a 1500 person club night kind of thing. Right. So at that point, I returned home to Ottawa. And actually got into digital marketing full time. That's the progression. I learned, as the industry was learning for the first time, the power of these new social media websites. And then I added websites. Then I added email marketing. Then I added SEO, which of course is, you know, the big thing these days. Everybody wants to rank, right? But I added all these things. So by the time 2013 rolled around, I was ready to actually open up a full agency. And that's the genesis of Digiterra, which is my digital marketing company, not to be confused with National Proms, which I'm sure we'll talk about later on in the podcast. But
yeah,
the thing is that Digiterra started in 2013, and that's when I started learning actually how to code for the first time. We started picking up some clients slowly but surely. And by the time 2016 rolled around, because of my DJ background, I spoke at the Canadian DJ show. And then based on that, I was able to get a speaking slot at DJ Expo, now called DJX, in 2017, and then Photo Booth Expo, otherwise called PBX, in 2018. And I've been speaking at both of those shows ever since. Cool. And it was a really cool thing to find out about Photo Booth Expo, because the guy who owns Photo Booth Expo is a guy named Rob Savickas. I knew him really, really well back in the day when we were both DJs in Toronto. Mm-hmm. And so I've known Rob for like, what, almost 30 years kind of thing.
Wow.
And we had sort of lost touch. You know how life goes, you know, move and here and there and whatever. But our paths crossed again when I saw Rob at the Canadian DJ show, and he told me all about this Photo Booth Expo. And I'm like, wow, you did that? Good for you, buddy. And well, yeah, because I mean, let's face it, when you're a DJ in your 20s and things like that, you know, it's you know, unless you're Tiesto, you're not making like earth-shattering money. I mean, the best of the mobile guys do pretty well, but let's face it, it's still only 100 to 150 grand a year, and then you got to pay your own bills out of that and all that stuff. So, you know, nobody gets into DJing to, you know, be like rich, like a Wall Street guy kind of thing, right? We do.
But it doesn't always happen like that.
We do it because we love the music.
That's
the thing I regret the most about having sort of left actually doing gigs, even promoting. Like, you can still enjoy the music, but let's face it, at some point you got to worry about how you're going to feed your family and all that kind of stuff. And for me, it was just time to move on. To be honest with you, I used to travel a lot when I was DJing. I mean, we did gigs in, you know, all over the Northeastern USA. I had a lock on all those fancy private schools out of New England, like the Choate Rosemary Hall, where JFK went to school, Andover, where all the Bushes went to school.
Wow.
Phillips Exeter up in New Hampshire, like Deerfield, Noble and Greenough, like the list just goes on, right? And it was really funny how I got those gigs, because essentially I was a little older. I was in my late 20s when those gigs were happening. And one of the student activity, directors at Andover told me why they hired me one time. And it's because I didn't actually hit on the young teenage girls. And apparently this had been a problem for them, because every DJ they hired wanted to drive to the hoop on these girls, right?
I
just rolled in there and gave everybody a good time and did my job. And for that, I ended up having all those New England private schools, and it was amazing. It was a good time and everything like that. I enjoyed it a lot, but it was time to move on. And I enjoy what I do now. So the common marketing area, as I see the question on the screen.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to rank on Google, right? Which means SEO. The problem is that really, really heavy SEO is not the cheapest thing around. And in conjunction with that, right, to look good as a mobile entertainer, you've got to have a pretty good website, okay? And a lot of DJs, like, everyone's quick to complain when a client, you know, asks for a DJ for $500, but then the DJs repeat the mistake and they ask for the $500 website.
That's the first time I heard it put like that, but yeah. you got a point there. Yeah, they.
Well, the thing is that listen, I can do a $500 or $1,000 website in a couple of hours, right, and get somebody looking live. But imagine, if you will, you're a mechanic, okay, and you've got this night. Do you remember that car from back in the day, the Fiero?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Remember that big scandal when the engine in the Fiero was proven to be inadequate?
Yep. You
guys remember that?
Yep.
It's the same thing with websites. If you go for the $500 or $1,000 website, the guts inside are not going to be good, and Google's not going to see it. You got to remember, who's the biggest viewer of all for your website? Google. It's not a human being.
It's Google.
And everything that you do in the code, okay, Google sees it. Google's not looking at your pretty pictures. Google is looking at how the code is structured, okay? So to give you an example, one of the biggest mistakes that a DJ who goes after that cheap website, or a DJ who even tries to do it themselves, is they don't actually define the meta, because you don't see the meta from the outside, right? The meta title, the meta description, all right? And if you don't define things like that properly, then Google's not going to see it. And if Google doesn't see it, you're not going to rank for it. So SEO is a battle that requires an ongoing effort, right? And
go ahead. I have a question though, as you speak about this. So what should a good website cost, or what do you think is the how much you should spend to be in the right area?
It's kind of vague.
I mean, I know it's vague, but what do you think you probably should spend on a decent website?
In 3 to 5 grand. Yeah, it depends on how many services you offer. Okay, so a couple of sites that I've done that I did like 3 or 4 years ago, one for Touch of Class in Boston, and another one for Pulse Entertainment in Philadelphia, right? Both of those guys run serious multi-op companies, right? Like with hundreds of thousands of dollars of revenue every year. I mean, I'm not privy to their exact numbers, but I know both of them are clocking well over $500,000 a year in revenue, right?
Yeah.
They have a lot of add-ons, right? And this is something that every mobile entertainer should be prepared to offer. You got your basic service, and then have your add-ons, right? That it's like when you go to a restaurant and that pesky waitress is like, hey, do you want to buy some overpriced cake for dessert? Right? That's how they pad the bill. That's how they get their tips up. We all know this, right? Anybody who's savvy enough knows this. It's the same thing with mobile entertainers, right? Like, okay, so my friend Ken Costco out of A Touch of Class in Boston, right? He doesn't necessarily just go to the DJ shows, right? But he also goes to a show called IAPA, which is like that fair show, right? IAPA. And they've got inflatable games. They've got like confectionery stuff. And the last thing he bought, the most recent thing that he bought, was this super cool cotton candy maker.
Oh, wow. Right?
And it's like an automated, like factory style cotton candy maker that you can actually bring to an event and set up. Right. So here's the thing. Not only is he using that as an upsell for his gigs, and he'll charge like a couple hundred bucks, and it's just pure profit. Okay.
Wow.
But he also brings it to the bridal shows. Like, he brings this cotton candy.
For him at the bridal show. And
every bride walking by his booth gets cotton candy. And he does novel stuff like that. Hmm. Right? And the brides are, oh, that's so cute. Next thing you know, he's got him booked on a Zoom call. And he's booked him for a basic package plus add-ons, right? Wow. You can take, listen, let's say, okay, so the average price, depending on the market you're in, right, give or take, the average price for a good wedding DJ is about $2,000 right now. And I know some of your viewers are going to say, no, it's $2,500. But in other places in the country, it's $1,500. So the average across the country is about $2,000 for a good wedding DJ these days, right?
Yeah.
I see my friends / clients take that $2,000 wedding and turn it into a $5,000 gig in a heartbeat, just off a Zoom call. Wow. It's like, okay. $2,000.
I guess what you're saying is always be upselling, or always trying to
ABC, buddy. Glengarry Glen Ross, always be closing.
Yeah, and I think a lot of DJs, when they book something, they're like so happy to get it, they don't even thinking about trying to upsell. We just glad to get the sale. And you got
exactly right, because let's face it, there's too many jocks out there, and it's competitive and things like that. But all the best guys, you know, my clients, guys who I know who are not. I respect. I mean, you know, of course, the big famous name in the industry is Joe Bunn out of the Carolinas. Uh-huh. And, you know, like, there's other big multi-op guys out there. And I see one consistent theme all the time is they're always upselling. You know, hey, want the cotton candy for $200? Great. By the way, I've got photography. I've got videography. I've got photo booths. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Next thing you know, a $2,000 contract just turned into $7,000. And what is it? Like $4,500 is in profit.
Yeah.
Wow. Right. So you take $2,500, you shell it out to pay your, pay your suppliers, whatever. Right. And you've just more than doubled your in, you know, in pocket money from that gig.
Yeah.
One night, just because you had the wherewithal, the, you know, the attitude that you go through your checklist.
And seeing that's the thing, you touched on a key word, you know, first the attitude, and then I would say the information, you know, having a clear understanding of what your company stands for and what you have to offer, and knowing how to have a conversation and walk somebody into another sale.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me just, I'm not being rude. I'm just looking at my second monitor here. DJX actually just announced a seminar today that I found to be very interesting. Just give me a second here. I won't take long.
While you're pulling it up, be thinking about this, and I know you've touched on it. Why is marketing so important?
Well, because if you don't market, no one's going to see you.
Yeah, that's real easy, quick, simple answer.
Yeah, it's no one's going to see you, and you have to do some sort of marketing, whether you're doing it with a you know, with someone like me, or whether you're doing it yourself, or even if you're just exhibiting at the bridal shows. Right? You've got to get out there. You've got to be seen. Listen, we all know that one of the best ways of getting gigs is referrals. At a particular gig, if you're doing a good job, then someone is going to come up to you and say, hey, I'm having this party. I'm having that party. And of course, that works a lot at weddings.
Yes.
And you've got all those young ladies there who are thinking about stuff. You've got to have your cards ready. You've got to always be closing, right? But let's say you have a bad couple of months, like COVID, that's a pure example, right? What ended up happening is all that referral traffic dried up because there was no gigs for a couple of years. So no, there was no referrals whatsoever. You've got to make sure that you look good online, and you've got to make sure that you're looking good for Google so that you're actually ranking. Okay, Jeffrey, I'm actually going to send you a link on Facebook right now.
Okay.
This guy, Troy Adams.
I know Troy.
Yeah, well, I don't know him. I'm going to introduce myself for sure. But his seminar for August in Atlantic City was announced today. Uh-huh. And I don't know him, so I can't really comment on whether he's good or not. But his write-up was pretty good. And so if I'm guessing right based on his write-up, I'm guessing that this guy is a true blue sales professional. And he's going to talk about the things that I touched on just now, like having your script ready, having your service menu ready, having your progressions ready in the middle of that Zoom call, things like that, right? And I'm sure he'll even go beyond what I'm saying, of course. But the thing is that this guy seems like the real deal. And if you know him, you're probably better in a better
position. I heard him speak one time, and he was really good. I had thoughts of doing some things, and I had reached out to him about being a speaker at something I was planning. So he really impressed me the first time I heard him. Yeah.
Well, and more importantly, right, seminars like this, seminars like mine, seminars like Mike Marquez from New York City, all that stuff, right? That's the real reason that the value of these shows exist, right? Like, it's not necessarily the trade show floor. Someone who says they go to these shows because of the trade show floor isn't seeing the big picture. Right? It's education. It's community. Who are you going to meet there, you know, that you might be able to do some sort of a deal with, right? Like for me, right, the show floor is just something funky that you can enjoy yourself on, right? But the real value is in the corridors. It's in the seminars. It's in the hallways where you can actually expand your network. Is that how you met your partner?
No. I have to send out an APB item on him for every conference we go to because he's ducked in some corner, some hallway, doing something or seeing a new product. And I'm texting him. We're trying to set up an interview, and he's nowhere to be found. So, yeah, that's where he makes all his hay. I try to make mine in the public
eye. He's making moves.
Yes, he is. I mean, and then, you know, he does great stuff with those moves. But, I mean, I'm like, at least text me and tell me where you're going and where you're going to be at. So,
I used to have a booth at both shows. I stopped at the booth because I just didn't feel like standing in the same place all day. I wanted to be out there in the action.
Yeah, that's what we did. This, well, we had a booth, but we also went around and interviewed people in the different spots. But yeah, that kind of, because if people don't make it to you, you might not see somebody you want to see by staying in that booth.
All right, Jeff, this is on you, sir.
So this is one of my favorite areas from you. How did you get bit by the AI bug?
Well, it's because I'm fundamentally lazy and AI saves time.
That's a horrible answer, but it's a good answer.
It's the truth, honestly. Like so I'm going to send you another. Okay, so I've mentioned before that we've got a huge prom initiative that we've just launched. So here's the site. I just Slacked you another. I just Facebooked you another website. Now, if you look at this website, almost every image on here is AI generated. Okay, not only was it so fast to do, it also solved the problem fact that the images that I wanted for this website didn't actually exist. So let's say,
Rewind. The images that you wanted didn't actually exist.
That's right.
Okay, carry on.
If I was doing a website for a DJ company in Dallas, and I wanted to get an image of a good DJ, you know, pumping the crowd up, I just, you know, go search for Jay Powell and, you know, pull up some DJ image of JP rocking the wheels, right? But those images actually exist. But take a look at the images on that site that I just Facebooked you.
Okay. Right?
Look at the scenes. Because this, you know, National Proms is so progressive and so new, there's no images out there. And so what was I faced to do? Spend tens of thousands of dollars in photo shoots? I didn't feel like it. So I generated the images. In the startup community up here in Ottawa, there's another company called the Rent Anything Store, right? And that, it's basically like an Uber for renting stuff, okay? So he's doing the same thing. The images that he wants don't actually exist. They've never been taken before.
So are all of them generated? Like this one with all the kids having dinner, is that one generated? That one looks it's almost real, though.
Well, okay, and here's the thing about AI that's very important, okay? So this is takeaway number one for this podcast tonight. The more detailed your prompt is to whatever AI image tool you're using, the more realistic your photo is going to be.
Wow. these are really good. I shared the link in the stream, but man, these pictures are...
What I just said is like the first commandment when Moses is coming out of the mountains with the Ten Commandments, okay? The more detailed your instructions for Google Gemini or Midjourney or DALL-E 2 or DALL-E 3 or whatever, right? The more detailed your instructions, the better your image is actually going to be.
So who is this aimed at? Is it aimed at schools or is it aimed at DJs?
Prom marketing. Sorry,
I'm on it now. He's brought it to me.
Before he answers that, let's ask him what it is, because he's going to start talking to it and nobody knows what
it is. I'm sorry. Okay. All right. So, I have a couple other questions.
No, go ahead. That one. I just want you to.
Okay.
Let's get into proms in a few minutes. Finish off on regular digital.
Yeah, we'll finish out on this. Okay. Wait a minute. Hold on one second. I got a question. I definitely got a question I want to ask about this. Okay. So where are we at? This is a question a lot of people ask. So do you see AI replacing DJs in the future?
I see that an attempt will be made at it. I don't think it's going to be successful, though. Okay. And maybe in 100 years, right? But the thing is that the biggest thing of a DJ is reading the crowd. That's the most important skill. It's more important than beat mixing. It's more important than your technical, although those things are also important, right? But the biggest thing about putting on a good party is being able to read the crowd. I mean, how many times as jocks have we all been in front of a crowd and And, you know, all of a sudden, one particular song stinks up the joint. Like, for example, if you play R. Kelly, if you're being stupid and you're playing R. Kelly and everyone vacates the dance floor, right? Right, because of all that, you know, the scandals with R. Kelly and soon to be Diddy, by the way.
I just wonder if it's going to hit Diddy like that. Because, I mean, we saw the tape with R. Kelly. We can all believe him. We don't have any tapes. I don't know. We'll see how it
gets lost.
We'll see how it hits. But go ahead. All right, I'm with you.
To be continued on Diddy. I mean,
it's
certainly a topic worth following for us anyway. Uh-huh. But the thing is that we as DJs need to be reacting within 2 to 3 minutes when things start to go south.
Oh, you don't have that long.
Sometimes seconds.
Just seconds, man. You got to be in and out. I mean,
yeah. If you listen, if you play a song and half your dance floor leaves, you better queue up by the end of the second chorus.
No, that's too long.
You better be ready right then.
I mean, you may even have to get out in the first verse.
Well, you're probably right. I'm just not as good of a DJ as you guys.
Well, I understand, but stems makes life easy. You can take the words out and go right to your next track.
Yeah.
But no, I understand what you're saying. And yeah, you do need time, but sometimes you don't have that long, especially in a big crowd with a lot of kids.
That's why you really got to have your crate set up. I mean, you got to have that emergency crate at the top of your list, like your bread and butter. You know what I mean? And, sites like, you know, various sites that give you playlists and things like that, depending on what kind of gig you're at, whether it's a regular wedding or a quince or something like that, you got to be ready. I mean, you said it yourself. If I stand corrected. If you got to be, you know, out of there within 30 seconds, you better have your crates ready and everything queued up and ready to go.
Yeah, and most of us, hopefully, are 2 or 3 songs ahead already anyway, because if the one you played didn't work, usually when that happens, it's a request. That's what kills the vibe most of the time. It's a horrible request. They really want to get it in. You try to please them, and next thing you know, you just threw a grenade in the middle of your dance floor.
Yeah, I my last couple of years, I stopped taking requests.
I don't feel that strongly about it, but sometimes I'm like, really, 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 really?
The question is this: how many DJs, if they were being honest, would say, "I hate requests"?
All of them.
Would you say that?
Depending on the situation.
Well, you're not saying you hate it then. You're saying
for the most part, if there was a percentage,
it'd be high.
The percentage for me is like in the high 90%.
Well, I'd be in the 10% because to me, you can get a gem from somebody in the audience.
Oh, you can.
Yeah. And sometimes you won't be the thought of something. They can drop someone on you and be like, okay, and I drop, and it's great.
Yeah.
But the rest of it can be high.
That's
garbage.
Why I listen to all. Yeah. I'm selective in what I
do. Yeah, you be selective. But yeah, I think it's a good thing to be open because you might not be have played for these people and they may have something totally different. But all right, go ahead.
All right, so he asked you that question. What are some of the best uses for AI for DJs that you see in your
opinion? I think that AI will help DJs who are less than the best in terms of song selection.
Mm.
Right. It's only a matter of time before all the big music player platforms like Serato's and Virtual DJ and all that kind of stuff. It's only a matter of time before those platforms, those tools, those packages actually embed AI into their system. The same way
they kind of do already because they have smart crates. So you can be playing and it will give you songs to play with that. Serato already has that.
It's going to get better though, right? Because let's face it, AI is not a perfect science right now. There's still improvements in the code to be made. There's still more data to process within the model. You got to remember AI and its fundamental basics. You need to have enough data to actually let the AI engine have enough data to make a choice, right? So eventually you'll find, all the songs that have ever been played or ever been produced, published, whatever, they will have their proper categorization. And then you'll be able to do something like you'll be playing like September 1963 or something like that. And, you know, the AI engine within whatever tool you're using is going to spit out recommendations. And it'll be based on multiple aspects. It'll be based on popularity. It'll be based on BPMs. It'll be based on the key of the song, things like that. And that is an exciting thing to actually watch. But like I said before, you know, to your previous question, I don't ever think AI will truly take over because, you know, there's the whole thing about reading a crowd. We discussed that already. There's also the fact that DJs often are also MCs at their own event. I mean, some of the better weddings, the more expensive weddings, they have a DJ and an MC, right? Two separate people. And that's a good thing. But there are a lot of, for example, my my good friend Ryan Von On out of Cleveland, who runs By Request Mobile DJs. Cleveland is not the same market that Boston and Philadelphia are for Ross and Ken. So Ryan's average is about $1,500 to $2,000 a night. And that kind of budget just doesn't have enough budget to actually hire two people. Keith, nice to see you there on the screen. Great profile image, bro. The AI and the popularity will be based on plays. And if Serato and Virtual DJ and the others get their act together, then they're going to have every single DJ who uses their platform automatically send in playlists. So in other words, they're going to be reporting on the songs that they've played at gigs. And that'll help a number of things. It'll help train the AI engines. It'll also help A&R reps to know what songs are still popular out there. So the labels will actually find a little bit of value on this. But mind you, don't expect the labels to actually give us anything for that value because they're cheap. But certainly that's the way it's going, right? And of course, everyone will have the opportunity to opt in or opt out. And I suspect that the people who opt in on their playlist will be granted some sort of a benefit of some type. Keith, look at this guy, Keith. Keith also runs a good show out of Chicago called Marquee. But let's face it, Keith likes to stir up a little bit of trouble, eh?
Yeah, always.
He's a good brother. So in saying that, about the part about Serato, Virtual DJ, Record Box, getting DJs to submit their playlists. Mm-hmm. That may be a hard one. It would be good if they had, you know, a part of their terms and conditions that they could automatically grab the playlists.
Sure.
That would require for you to be online.
I think if they did that, though, that they would get hit for an antitrust lawsuit from the federal government, the attorney general's office, because that kind of stuff isn't really copacetic anymore. There always has to be an opt-out in a number of different tools out there. Like,
oh, I agree.
Serato has something in it, or maybe it's Record Box, but there's something that you can all your playlists can automatically go now.
But what we're talking about is where it goes to them.
It does.
Sure. If they're doing that, eventually.
Oh, it's actually going to Record Box I have to look at mine to make sure.
Well, here's the thing. All that stuff that's going on with Google and Europe over the last 4 or 5 years, that's exactly what this is all about, the right to opt out. And that's why Google had to pay a big fine in Europe out of France. You know, because they, you know, before that, they weren't letting people opt out. They have to let people opt out. And that'll be the same thing. Even if the player, what do you even call those? Like, you got to remember, I come from the era of Techniques 1200s. You know what I mean? And
record. Yeah, we all do.
Well, not
that we're a bit vintage too. We may not look like it, but we are.
I'm right there with you. Vintage all the way. So yeah. The players, if you will, the controller software, if they're doing it at some point, they're going to get dinged.
Oh yeah.
I really feel like they are already doing it. Every time you log in, especially if you have a subscription, I'm sure they are getting data from somewhere, because every playlist we have now, from the time you bought that controller until you. It's being collected.
But they have to, if they're using that data for something they have to have something where you have to.
Well, we probably did. You just might not have known. Do you acknowledge this? Yes. Okay, now they're getting your data.
If they're smart, what they'll do is they'll say your playlists are going to get submitted. But if you also enter your company name and your website, your information will, you know, and your playlist will go on a public site. And once it does, that'll actually be a backlink in favor of your site, which helps your SEO.
Yeah. Okay. I remember that.
Yeah. And also Keith made a good point too, when it comes to collecting that data, you know, you do have a lot of horrible DJs out there with horrible playlists.
Yeah.
So if you suck that up into there, you could have AI playing or selecting a bad song.
But they might have some good. But like he said, it's going to be on plays and different things.
Yeah, I know.
So if you got one play for a horrible song, it's not going to make the list. So if you got 2,000 for this one and you got one for that one, I doubt that one will make the list. But that's a good one.
There's a lot of ways to configure it. And, you know, all I'm really saying for the moment is that these software packages, I guarantee you they're all actively looking at where they go, how they move forward. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them will get it. Others won't. You know, and that's just life. It's, you know, kill or be killed kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's move
on. As Americans, you should appreciate that.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah. Kill or be killed.
Yeah.
So how can, you know, for yourself and what you do, so how can business owners benefit from the services you provide?
Well,
what are some of those success stories?
There's a lot of DJs out there that have bad websites because they want the $500 website, right? That's going to hurt you more than help you. And it will actively hurt you because here's the thing, right? It's actually better for me when someone calls me up and says, well, I don't have a website right now. I need, you know, because they're starting from scratch. You can do it the right way, right? I kind of cringe a little bit when someone calls up and says, I need to replace my bad website. And I'm just like,
but how is that bad? Because it's pretty much the same thing. So I just.
No, it's not. No, it's not. Because
okay, please explain.
JP, I love you, guy, but that is just the most horrible thing I've ever heard.
So, but I mean, if you start from scratch, it's just scratch. But if it's one already out there, you just throwing it away and starting a new one.
No, you can't.
Yes, but here's the one thing that negates that whole line of thought from you. Okay.
Okay, that's why we're here.
Google has already indexed your bad site.
Oh.
You can't do that. That's why when you build a site, you have to make it, or what they call a construction mode.
So
because it will index those pages.
See, listen,
it's an act of God to get.
Listen to your partner. He knows.
I know. He knows. Let me ask you. So if somebody came to you, say, I came to you, I have a website and it's horrible, would you say I need to start over completely, pretty much?
No. I will warn them, though, that they're for a little while, they're going to be in SEO winter.
What's an SEO winter?
That's a really good thing for a Canadian to say. You know what I mean?
I'm sure it is.
Hey, Keith is popping up a URL there.
Yeah. He wants you to look at his website.
Okay. He puts it on a public podcast there. We are going.
Oh my goodness. Have at it, Tech. This is not the Keith KC show. Can we do that after the show and y'all attack each other after attack his website?
He has a good website. I'm going to give him props.
Okay, we understand.
Okay. We're not going to get into an SEO analysis into the code right now because it takes too much time. I will say that this is not the worst website in the world, but it could be better. So, I don't know. B?
Well, hey, that's better than an F.
Yeah.
Better than a C and better than a D.
I've seen some Fs. And listen, old guys like us, we know what a bad website is. It looks like it's from the 90s in the GeoCities days. Remember GeoCities?
At least he passed. That's a good thing.
Nah, listen, Keith has got a lot of things going on, right? Not only does he run Marquee, but he runs his own entertainment company. He also, you know, he also does, I think, a bridal show in Chicago as well. So Keith's problem is not that he doesn't know what he's doing. Keith's problem is that he's got a lot on the go.
Don't we all?
I don't know. Not as much as Keith.
Yeah, yeah. He's a serial entrepreneur.
There you go. So, all right, getting back to your question, right? The way they can benefit from us is, I mean, if you want to get granular, obviously we do websites, we do mobile apps, we do SEO, we do social media, we do email marketing, and the list goes on, right? If you want to attach a high-level overview statement to all of that, we will take your digital footprint and we will make you look better, okay? That leads to conversions, short-term or long-term, depending on what else, you know, what other kinds of marketing that you do. Because here's the thing. We can't be your sales staff. Nobody knows your business as well as you. So if you suck at sales, don't expect us to transform you magically overnight, right? It's not going to happen, right? Yeah. But if you're good at sales, here's a good example. My friend Ken Costco from Boston, the Touch of Class, right? This guy, if he gets you on a Zoom call, he is getting that client. Okay. It's just that simple. Ken is an expert on the Zoom calls. But Ken is, well, how do I say this politely? Okay.
Awkward.
He does not know tech. Yeah, he's like, listen, when it comes to tech, he's like me before MySpace, before my MySpace days. Wow. You know? But he, listen, he runs a great company. He knows what he's doing. He's got 35 years in. By the way, Ken has also spoken at DJX and PBX, and Ken loves to give financial tips to DJs because he's done well for himself, right? He's, you know.
He said he's out of Boston?
He's out of Boston, atouchofclass.com.
A Touch of Class. I think I met him in Boston at Harvest of Sound, as a matter of fact.
I doubt it. He doesn't go there, but he does. He has gone to Atlantic City for the last number of years.
Well, I saw
short little guy. He's always at the shows. He's always wearing a flashy jacket.
Okay. Yeah, but I think I did the last day. He might with a banner sponsoring something, but it's either here. He might have been at DJX. I might have saw it at DJX because I did go to DJX this year.
Yeah. So that's the basic answer to the question, how can business owners benefit from being with us? Okay. We will make you look better. We will make you rank on Google eventually, because don't forget, every mobile entertainer in the world is fighting the knot and wedding wire for those page one rankings. Right. And that's a little bit of a problem because those guys spend about $50,000 a month on SEO at least. So that's it. Remember, SEO is a competitive game. Who are you ranking against? And so it's a little bit tough. We've had some successes. We've had some failures, right? But we're always learning from our failures and making ourselves better, okay? Now, here's the next thing that DJs and photo boothers and the other verticals within the wedding industry can benefit from us. We all know that proms are one of the big four with respect to.
Are you leading us into prom planners?
He's doing something.
Yeah, he did. He's keep a going. Smooth segue. Go right ahead.
Keep going.
I'm smooth like a brother, you know.
Oh my goodness.
So about 4 years ago when COVID began, right? Obviously we had our problems because most of our clients were in the wedding business and the wedding business stopped. So I took the high road and I basically said, guys, just stop paying. We'll stop working, obviously, but there's no harm done, no harm, no foul. Come back to me when you're ready, right? And some have come back, some haven't. Compare that to the Knot and Wedding Wire, who tried to enforce their contracts even when DJs were making no money, right? So we took the high road on that. But in March and April and May of 2020, right, I decided I took a really good look at the future because, I mean, we were suffering too, right? If it wasn't for the fact that I had some savings, I'd be dead in the water. I'd be like living in the snow in the winter in the street kind of thing. But I did have some savings. That's all gone now. I had to take a really serious look at what we were doing and where our future was. And one of the things if you remember from back in the day, we were a prom specialist. I didn't do weddings in corporates. I didn't really like them, but I liked, you know, the high school stuff, the prom stuff. I liked the college stuff. I liked the nightclub stuff. That's who I was as a jock. And the prom industry doesn't really have any go-to sources online with respect to getting the word out directly in front of student councils, okay? And I know this because I used to be the guy going after the proms as a DJ. What has existed in the past is that you've had to actually try and get through the secretary at the school. And those secretaries, they are the hardest gatekeepers out there to get through. So, you know, anybody who's ever tried to, you know, to get past one of these, like, you know, draconian school secretaries knows it's hard. So we took a look at the prom industry as a whole, right? Procurement for gigs is awful. Prom organization online tools for the prom committees themselves don't exist. They're using spreadsheets. They're using clipboards, paper, and pen. Right. So what we did was we decided to write something called Prom Planner, which you can see at promplanner.app. That site is for the schools. Prommarketing.com is for the vendors who will want to advertise with us to reach those prom committees. And we've designed a whole program for all the different verticals out there. B2B verticals, which are the DJs, the photo booths, the venues, everybody wanting business directly from a prom committee. Okay.
Okay. So I was wondering what those meant when I saw those. But
then wait, then there's two other sectors. Number one, the first the next sector is B2C, which is the dress, the tux, the limo, the florist, the vendors that are going after the students. Okay. And finally, there's the global brands. And I had to learn this the hard way because clearly I've never worn a prom dress before. Right. But there are some very large companies that make prom dresses. There's about 40 big ones. And that industry is just huge. Like, for example, Giovanni, which you can see at Jovani.com. Uh-huh. Right. Giovanni is a global company with, you know, selling dresses in like over 80 countries or something like that. And they didn't even have any go-to sites or resources in order to reach students. And so what they were doing is they were doing it like the chocolate bar companies, where they would fight for placement at all the boutiques, right? You know, the way the chocolate bars go into Walgreens and, you know, they have their traveling reps and they're like, listen, put the Kit Kats at the top of the row in front of people at the cash. You know, that's what they do, right? The chip companies, it's the same thing. They fight over shelf space. It happens in the grocery stores too. And it also happens in the prom dress industry. But now with, you know, the kind of programs we're putting together for both prom committees, students, and vendors, they can just go through us. We're a triple-sided marketplace.
Wow.
And and unlike other forms of marketing, there's a direct relationship between somebody advertising with one of our national proms programs and being seen by the prom committees that they want to go after. There's a direct relationship. If you're with us, we're going to put you in front of decision makers. And then you got to compete just like everybody else.
Always.
Yeah.
So what is a gem that you're willing to leave with us tonight as far as, you know, where something you could share with people that like your motivation, your driving force, whatever, something like that?
I think the last thing I want to drop with everybody who's listening is subscribe to the two DJs and a mic.
We love that. We love that, man. And I'll be at every seminar you give about AI whenever I know you're speaking about it, wherever I'm at.
So we'll see you two in August then in Atlantic City?
Maybe.
Come on. What's with this maybe?
Well, because
schedule. We gotta make sure schedule.
Yeah, I was able to.
We don't want to be. It's schedule.
Yeah, and I was able to sneak it in last minute last year, but we don't know. We're gonna check and see.
Yeah, it's really busy around that time. But
well, sure, because you've got gigs and everything like that is working. Right?
No, it's just okay. So we did Max. We're doing Marquee. We're doing Midwest. Doing Harvest of Sound, we're just trying to get them all in. And
Harv, Harvest is one of those shows that's growing slowly and surely. Yeah. And the guy I know at Harvest is a guy named Lou Paris. Great guy.
Yeah. We know Lou. They took really good care of us last year. So, and we really haven't made a connection with DJ X yet either. So that's the other thing. So we got to get an intro. I know you told me if I come, you'll introduce me to the right people.
I will take you right to the top, brother.
I know. You told me already.
There's only one condition, though. If I'm going to introduce you, you got to wear a prom dress.
Oh! Well, being a cat told me I don't need to do that. I can't wear no dress. We can go another route. I can buy you whatever you want to drink.
Let's find something for you. Nice and skinny and tall and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, well, I ain't skinny no more. I'm definitely tall, but I ain't skinny. But
accentuate your highlights.
Yeah, Jordan, man, we've enjoyed it. Thank you for jumping on with us. And, we love it. You're one of my favorite speakers whenever I'm there. Like I said, I went to all four of your seminars at DJX. So we're going to try to get there. And definitely, since I know that you will definitely introduce us to the white people. We'll see. We're going to look at the schedule real close.
You guys have a good podcast. I'll promote you guys as much as I can. And, keep up the good work. I mean, you know, there's lots of podcasts out there. But
I like
the podcast that keep it real, you know.
We do. And we're lucky and blessed. This is year two we're going into. So everything is continuing to grow. And I thank you for your promotion or whatever you do for us. And we look forward to seeing you out there in the near future, sir.
I hope so in August, but if not, I understand.
Stay warm.
Thanks, guys.